Welcome to the May 6th Aries Working Group call. It's not Cinco de Mayo or the Revenge of the 5th anymore. It's just plain old May 5th. There's no Star Wars jokes to be had. Glad you're here. We have a cool agenda today. We ask you to abide the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy to both create a wonderful interactive environment and one that is free of legal issues preventing our work from being used. Anyone new here that has not introduced themselves previously that would like to? All right. Announcements. I realized I didn't put this on here. Yesterday was the SSI meetup and the topic was the Trust Over IP Foundation. And I believe they have more stuff going on tomorrow-ish. Does anyone have any details on that?
There's a couple of announcements tomorrow, a couple of webinars, I believe, for it. I can find a link while we, in the background, paste it in.
Perfect. I think that might be very interesting to folks here. Any other announcements? Robert, I saw you introduce yourself in the chat. Welcome, glad you're here. Okay, we're experimenting with not doing the related work coverage on the weeks that it is not covered in the morning meeting. So I wasn't gonna dedicate a lot of time to that, but I did want to, if anyone had anything specifically that they wanted to mention about work updates that have happened, that they have a chance to do so before I move along.
Did you copy the stuff from this morning into this? That'd probably be worth doing if not.
I almost did. And then I was worried that someone had entered stuff that wasn't in there and I hadn't had a chance to, I didn't have enough time to do a proper compare.
Yeah.
So I was going to, and then I should have done it right after the meeting this morning. And that way there's less of a chance I'd overwrite something that someone else has added. Yeah. So I do apologize. Those notes.
Maybe have a protocol for that. Leave it blank until. Anyway, yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's not a terrible idea. But if you are interested in hearing those or reading the notes, those are in the call from this morning, which is available in the list at this magic link. And you will find the previous agendas and recordings. Here was the one that's there. So this top section is what appears in the list, and then all the notes and the attendees and everything else are there and present. So that's how you get to those. Is there anything specifically that folks would like to mention about work progress or things related?
I wondered about your email address.
My email address?
Yeah.
Indicio is a consulting company that is starting up, and they have agreed to fund my community involvement in the Aries community. Okay. So that's why I'm listing that there. Okay. This is like the only thing they actually get besides like goodwill, you know, or like the progress in the community. So that was a nice thing for me to be able to do.
And that company is a lot of sovereign folks, right? That's what I understand.
Yes, it's not a one for one, of course, but there's a lot of sovereign folks are involved in that. It is not the Sovereign Foundation.
No, exactly. But I saw Heather, Ken, Helen, all part of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
That's the same group.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Here's our agenda today. I wanted to do a quick IW recap as it related to Aries. And then we have an overview by Tobias and some conversation by Stephen Curran about the JSON-LD selective disclosure stuff that was presented at IIW. And you know, as it relates to Aries, like what are we going to do because of this? What are our plans? I have a quick review of an RFC, the protocol role request, This is something that I had trouble naming and I had committed to do previously. So that's actually here, and I'd like to cover that briefly. Another note too, it was brought up in our morning meeting that we are not as diligent about merging all the PRs and everything else as need to be, as needs be. If you have something that's hung up, there's a couple of things we need to get better. But in the meantime, there's a couple things that that would help us. And one of them, and by us, I mean the repo maintainers of the RFC repo. One of them is that if you would like some airtime to be able to talk about an RFC, gather ideas or feedback or things like that, then I would very much welcome your participation in the meeting. You just got to let me know what you want to talk about and about how long you think it will take, and we'll get you on the agenda. The second thing is that if you bug us to solve an issue like merge a PR that just ought to be merged, then that's something that we can get on a little bit faster. There's no maliciousness here. It's just we're all busy and we haven't been as diligent as we should. So please, if you have something that is hung up, please do one or both of those things as you would like, as appropriate, and that'll help us move the stuff along in the community that needs to. We follow a champion model, meaning ideas are good, but to really get traction in the community and everything else, it helps to have someone champion them.
Sam, I apologize. I faded out just at the key point that I was going to add something. Did you say to set the merge ready tag on the PR?
You know, I didn't, but that's a super good tag. There is a merge ready tag.
There is a merge ready tag, and that is actually what you ought to do and let us know that that you feel it's ready to go and that we agreed early on that the editors or the maintainers would not really provide other than monitoring the process, and the process being that it's state changes that matter, and we're there just to sort of keep out junk out of the repository. So we would, if something's not appropriate, we would hold it up, but we are not here to hold up proposed protocols or anything like that. So certainly, if you just say merge ready, we would almost certainly just glance over it, look at it, and merge it.
Yes. So I have pulled up a PR of my own that I'm discussing today. I'm not going to apply the tag just yet because I wanted to discuss first. But this is the tag that I would apply, and that makes it really easy for maintainers when they come in here to be able to see the ones that they should prioritize in our actions. We ought to be better. This is too many open. We should be better. But that tag will help us very specifically. Thank you, Stephen. Okay, so here's what we have in the agenda. Any adjustments needed to the agenda before we get going? Awesome. IW recap related to Aries. This was kind of an open thing. I'll offer some things, but I'm very curious about anyone's impressions or things they enjoyed or stuff they learned or, anything that is a result of what happened at IW that's helpful for those that were not able to attend, but also helps focus our attention as a community on the what next because type things that happen there. Now we are going to be talking today about the JSON-LD stuff, which was a hot enough topic. It was suggested that we talk about that today, and we are. But other things, and I will offer one to get going. I really liked the hero demo. It was very well done, but the thing that I liked about it was that they were demonstrating DID-based group communication in kind of a neat way. We have not really discussed that from a general protocol perspective, and so I have it on my list to, and we talked briefly with them about talking with, about discussing standardizing some of the approaches that they took where appropriate so that these can be of benefit to the entire community. So I thought that was a really pretty cool thing to see. And that's something that I enjoyed.
Does this solve the NWISE problem?
It's one solution to the NWISE problem. So,
all right, so there's an issue, and I'm pretty sure you must have ported it over to the DIDCOM the new DIDCOM working group. There was an issue in this Aries repo related to that, opened by Daniel Hardman, and I remember there was also he had also pretty old Google Docs that sort of explored the problem space.
Yeah. So generally speaking, I'll add just a minute of color. If you're going to do groups, there's two ways to do it. And they're not one better. They're just different. One cool one that cryptographers tend to jump to, and for good reason, is that you can do like group key signatures, so that as a group you can arrive at a key that's used to encrypt messages and send them. That way, everyone that is members of the group can read them. Everyone that's not can't, and it's a thing that you manage. That works really well in a whole lot of ad hoc use cases where there's no really infrastructure needed, and we just need protocols in order to facilitate that sort of a thing to get there. Now, we're not there yet. But that's one of the ways that we have imagined doing this, though the work has not yet been done. There's another way that is a little bit more relevant when you either have regulatory requirements or logistical requirements that are hard to meet in that group model. And one of those things is very, very large groups. As soon as you get to the point where you have a substantial group size, then doing the group key coordination becomes difficult. Even in an automated protocol, there's just a lot of things to move around that could cause issues. So the other model that I've envisioned, and these are ideas that I've had, but I've never really built yet, is the idea that you could have an agent sort of manage the group. And the idea here is that you would, rather than messaging everyone in the group, you would message the agent, and it would rebroadcast that to the group. And there's a couple of advantages in this style that the other one doesn't have. They might also be disadvantages depending on your needs. One of them is that someone who joins the group later has the opportunity to see messages sent previously. Now, sometimes that's not desired, but sometimes, like in a customer support perspective, it would be really nice to see the history of kind of what had actually happened. Another advantage there is that the agent that kind of mediates the group could be performing, regulatory logging functions or other sorts of things that would allow that to happen. For example, this group is not an IPR protected group here, but in an IPR protected conversation, that agent could keep track of who can actually share with the group based on our IPR requirements, and that could happen in an automatic way. So that's a different way of doing group communication, and that's the way that that Hero has demonstrated. So when you open up like a customer support request, they create they involve an agent to manage the sort of group participation like that, with the obvious customer support benefit of being able to add an agent to the conversation that wasn't there from the beginning, and they can see the then history of what's going on. So this does hint at that this method of group communication avoids a little bit the NWISE problem, precisely from a cryptography perspective, but has a really useful function at managing groups. Now, I've imagined this, and we've loosely talked about this sort of things in this conversation, but it was really cool to see it demonstrated, and I was and the fact that they did this using did communication sort of at the core and building it from that was pretty exciting. Anyway, that's a little bit more color there, but so it's not a complete solution to the NWISE problem, but it explores one aspect of it. Sorry, I spoke too much, but there's some color there. Other thoughts or comments?
Sorry, you said the party that presented that demo is called Hero?
They're called Hero, yeah.
Okay.
And that's, it's pretty sure it's just hero.com. Yes, this is them.
All right.
And Seth and Vic. Were the two representatives from Hero there. Vic is the astoundingly nice video management style, and Seth is the developer. Seth Back, I believe is his name, did the development of it and was very cool. Okay, other IW, I didn't mean that to be a main point necessarily, but I'm happy to answer questions. Any other observations or reactions from IW as it relates to Aries? Nothing?
Sam, this is Jack. I'll add that it's still not crystal clear to me. It was very useful to have Anil John describe the interoperable project, but the conflict with DIDCOM and the the other approach, right? This is a somewhat of an 800-pound gorilla. But I had questions from Will Groh at Cloudocracy trying to describe, you know, the core of the dispute, and I couldn't describe it to him. So any help there would be useful.
So this is talking,
are you just talking Chappie or broader?
A little broader, but definitely including that. Yeah.
I mean, the Chappie one turned out to be there is no conflict. Chappie is, the CH is inappropriate.
Yeah, I was on
but,
that.
But politically useful, but yeah, it's just a transport. The broader piece, I mean, it comes down to, I mean, he really slammed, Anil really slammed the question from Richard. Implying a lot of things. I thought it was kind of not the most appropriate way of handling it. They've put certain restrictions on what open source software can be used in their stack. And right now that's not part of what's being done in this community. So it definitely, you know, he put a divide in there pretty strongly. That was my take from it. And the JSON-LD stuff that Tobias has been talking about, and the, you know, that could mend that link, but you know, Anil's comments were pretty aggressive.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I missed the session with
Anil's
comments to Richard, but I did catch the other sessions, right? That's the one I missed anyways.
Yeah, okay.
I unfortunately missed that other session too. I would have found it very useful to be. This IW had a high occurrence of sessions I couldn't go to because I needed to be in another session but wanted to be. Those were always unfortunate.
Yeah, but just as we go forward, I want to understand the conflict. If you say it's around open source, that gives me a lead to drill down on. Thanks.
And we can have, we shouldn't have it now, I think, probably, but we can have some. I think we can have some deeper discussions about the Homeland Project and how it relates to the Ares Project, which is unfortunately very little at the moment, although there are several participants right now that are using Ares code bases, but not really sort of things that have been core to the Ares discussion. So that is likely to be a conversation over the next weeks and months as the phase two of that project continues.
Yeah.
Agreed. Thanks, Sam.
In that Chappie versus DIDCOM discussion, there were some things that were clear to me, although I suspect that many of the people left with different conclusions about what happened there. But there was 100 people observing that session. And that was interesting. That was a lot of the people that day that were actually there. So it was obviously very important or a very interesting topic to many.
Yeah.
One of the obvious topics, which we'll get to, of course, is the JSON-LD stuff that Tobias presented and the discussions of how to apply that in Ares. So that's a main topic today. Unless there's further comments, we can go ahead and scoot along to that topic and hear about that.
So Tobias is up first to provide an overview, and then I've sort of put some slides together to sort of structure a discussion about how we in the Ares community might be, you know, how ready we are to use that, where we might or how we might use it. So I've sort of got something to structure a conversation around it so people can present that. We had a partial one of those in IAW, and this is to bring it back to the Ares community, make sure everyone can participate in it, hear about the, you know, what things we could be doing. And what opinions are about how we would do those things. So Tobias, you want to go ahead?
Yeah. So what I'll do is probably just jump around a few of the slides and jump out to some of the code that we and the artifacts we open sourced last week, just to give you guys a feel. So we've been doing a bit of work using Babius Plus signatures, which is you know, another signature algorithm that the Ursa community has been building up support for. And we kind of, you know, we're intrigued by the performance, and we've been working with Mike Lotta from Sovereign, and we kind of took a different lens of how we could apply that to verifiable credentials. And I think we've come up with an approach that's quite a fast, you know, scalable way to get zero knowledge proofs into the verifiable credential ecosystem. And we think that the lift is nice and small for others in the community as well. So we think the way that it was received at IAW was there was a lot of people that were not previously interested in zero knowledge proofs that felt like they could use it in this approach. So probably just jumping to some of the solutions, some of the things that we open sourced last week was there's a crate in Ursa called BBS. We've wrapped that. So we've kind of gone in one vertical and in the JavaScript and TypeScript ecosystem, but the architecture we've kind of outlined, we think can be some of it, more of it can probably be pushed into Rust if we want it to. And otherwise there are relevant artifacts in all the other different languages that I think people could pick up to replicate what we've done. Essentially, we've wrapped and exposed the signature algorithm here, and this isn't opinionated about anything to do with verifiable credentials. And then up here, we've basically created a layer that is a what's called a linked data proof type, which is one of the valid cryptographic kind of assertion formats under the verifiable credential spec, with the other being JWTs. Some of the notable things about the way that we've approached these JSON LDVCs is we wanted to reduce the need to have things like credential definitions and schemas. And so we've figured out a way to generate the credential definition on the fly, and it's performant enough. And so now we don't need anything other than the JSON LD context. So essentially, the VC that you issue under a normal schema in JSON LD is the only piece of information you require other than the cryptographic implementation to issue a ZKP-based verifiable credential. And that automatically makes it completely compatible with the VC data model now. And it's the way that it plugs in for others that are already using other signature types is very uniform. And so obviously the upsell for the guys in the VC community is that they can increment the signature type they're using today and get this new type of ZKP capability without too much effort. So the verifiable credential looks like this. As you can see here, the only difference between this and a normal ED25519 digital signature is a different proof type. And so it's important to note that this here is not a ZKP. This is just a verifiable credential that supports the ability to do what's called deriving a proof off it, where you're selectively revealing. And the proof that you derive is actually the zero knowledge proof. So yeah, we think that language is important to kind of clarify, just so we all know which aspect of the system is actually a zero knowledge proof.
And what aspect of that verifiable credential that we're looking at gives it the capability of zero knowledge proof?
The signature affords you the capability through a further cryptographic protocol, basically, to be able to derive zero knowledge proofs. But the thing I would say is this digital signature is not a zero knowledge proof. It allows you to produce zero knowledge proofs because of it as a digital signature. Does that make sense? It's like
yes, it does. I just wanted that clarification. Thanks.
Yeah. So and we have two different permutations. This one here obviously is demonstrating DID-based subject authentication, which doesn't doesn't meet all of our privacy, doesn't meet all of the privacy goals we have as a community. And so we're working on both those permutations. And we think the DID-based subject authentication is a low lift. And it is useful based on some of the opinions that have been had in the community. So we are creating two variations of the suite to support both this and link secret based verifiable credential issuance, which does give you better privacy guarantees around correlating the subject on presentation. The syntax here, so we need a syntax, obviously, to say I've got this thing called a verifiable credential and I would like to reveal only a portion of it. You know, I'd only like to reveal my given name, family name, and gender. And previously we kind of had, and then the community, we have like our own sort of syntax of doing that. And obviously, as we reassessed where we were sitting in reference to JSON-LD, we realized that there's a recent standard that's at a candidate recommendation at WTC called called JSON-LD framing. And it basically just means we can pick that up, and that does, that becomes a standard syntax, and we're not really doing anything custom. And the thing about that is, because the way the big notable improvement as well with this approach to JSON-LD based VCs is that we can do nested information. We're not limited to flat attribute lists anymore. You can nest information arbitrarily. And this syntax supports revealing anywhere down a verifiable credential. Anywhere down a verifiable credential. And to George's point, what makes it, what is the zero knowledge proof? Well, this is what you get out of the derived proof API. When you take this as an input plus what you would like to reveal, you get this out, which is a proof. And what makes it a zero knowledge proof in this instance, even though we don't have linked secret based subject authentication, is this proof here is what's called a proof of knowledge of the original signature, and it's not the signature itself. So that's why it's a zero knowledge proof. You're revealing proof that I have a signature that has the following attributes that were signed by the issuer without revealing that signature, because the signature itself is correlating. So features in the works, obviously the linked secret-based subject authentication, most of the, all of the crypto is there from the Ursa side. We just have some representation things that we want to make sure are nice and simple before we push out. We're working on this feature called domain proofs, which is related to some work that was highlighted in the credential threat model that I think Daniel Hyman and others did at RWOT, which was really good work. Non-correlating revocation and a scalable approach using Smuckle trees. Required reveal statements, we think, is something that is a kind of a cool feature that we're in the process of putting in as well. I can talk about that a little bit more if you like. And then I've just blanked on what else was going to be a point that I was raised, but
that's George has a question.
Yes. Tobias, in the previous slide, you mentioned that we are not, that the holder when producing this presentation is not revealing the issuer's signature.
No, they're not.
Oh, no, they're not. Okay. So how does, I'm sort of a little tripped up by this. How does the trust model work? I mean, as a verifier, how am I going to trust the provenance of this presentation?
The same way you trust CL signatures. Mechanically, it works the same. CL signatures is a proof of knowledge. I'm looking to maybe some of the cryptographers in the room if they want to jump in. Brent, would you like to jump in and clarify it?
I think what you're asking is how does the verifier know who the issuer is and how that they can trust the signature? So in order to verify the signature that's presented, they have to know who the issuer is, because the issuer has the public key. So they still use the issuer's public key to do the signature verification, but the signature string itself happens to be different every time it's presented.
Okay, so Tobias, can you point me to where is that the verification method? Does that point to the issuer's key? Issuer's
public key. Yeah, and this statement is integrity protected from the original proof as well. So you can't modify this either. So it's actually a signed statement from the issuer. They actually sign an identifier that points to their public key. So you'll notice here it's present. And when you derive a proof, it gets carried through in an integrity protected manner into here. So you can't tamper with it or remove it. Otherwise, this A, you don't know where to find the public key, and B, it won't validate because there's a statement missing, essentially. And so this proof, as Brent pointed out, the reason it's, what makes it zero knowledge, and I believe the mechanics of CL signatures are essentially the exact same, is you never reveal the actual signature, because this fixed signature here, if you reveal this every time, this is a form of identifier itself for the credential. Instead, you derive a proof where you choose to selectively reveal, which limits the ability for that correlation to occur. Okay, cool. So I'm just going to, so this is JSON-LD Signatures BBS, and I can drop some links in the chat for this this library, but essentially we'll just run a little demo. So you can just go into the samples folder here, yarn install and yarn demo, and in kind of 100 lines or less, you can issue, verify, derive a proof, and verify that derived proof. And if we have a look at what we did there, we just basically did the example I just showed you. So this is your input document. This is this set of the statements and the issuance information you would like to issue. This is it with the resulting proof attached. You can see that if we try to verify that, that comes back as verified as true. And then down here, we call derived proof, where we're choosing only to specify the family name and the given name. And if I jump in here to the derived proof frame, you can see why that's the case. If I change this to also include gender, it would work as well. And then you can see that if I try and verify the derived proof, I get back verified true. So that's kind of a simple sample of how to use that. And so to relate that to this diagram, essentially that's a JSON-LD signature suite, a couple of JSON-LD signature suites, which is the actual sample of this repository, and these plug in to JSON-LD signatures, which is used by VCJS. So you can use it to issue these types of credentials. We're still working with Digital Bazaar and others in the community to kind of iron it out and add formal support in a couple of places, but this library in the meantime allows you to do that. And just quickly, obviously these are just the stats you get from BBS Plus. Some of the notable differences going to ECC is some big performance upticks. So in getting rid of being able to remove the need for credential definitions, we will still get a really big uptick in performance in general of the signature suite, and then the size of the public keys in the DID document. The signatures and the proofs come down dramatically. Any other questions?
Can you share the slides?
Absolutely.
Good. I couldn't find them from IAW, so would love to have those.
We sent them on the CCG when we sent the spec over, but I will grab that link now. Oh, so also the other thing to be aware of is we have written a draft spec as well that documents this, that we are submitting as a new work item to the CCG, the Credentials Community Group over at W3C, because the linked data proofs, this defines the format of the public key required for the issuer, and also how the signature suite works in general. So our intention is to push that over and get that work on that track along with the other linked data proof suites. Cool. If there's no other questions, I'll stop sharing. Okay, cool.
Thanks, Tobias, for that overview.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, so my part of this was just to get a conversation going. So I'm going to try to do that. Share. So the idea that I'd like to talk about is, or that we talked about us discussing. Hang on, I'm just adjusting screens. I can monitor for people on the queue and chat and things like that. So we'll use that as a way to manage the discussion. So put up your hand when you want to speak, if you would, or put a Q plus one on the plus Q on the chat. So JSON LD ZKP is using BBS plus in Aries. So this is basically a discussion about what getting started means. What I've done is sort of have a set of slides that just sort of will hopefully be a trigger for discussion. I'm going to talk about the scope, and I quite possibly missed the scope. And so I could be wrong on this discussion right off the top, but assuming the scope is close to being what we want to talk about, what is the elements, and then I want to gauge what the community interest has been since many of us were on the call last week. So scope of the discussion is what is adding support in Aries for this new credential exchange mechanism. So JSON LD BBS plus CKP credential exchange. Deliberately out of scope to that is anything to do with Indy. So this would be basically a parallel addition to Aries without any impact at all or any change to Indy. Only potential is using Indy did as the issuers did, but that shouldn't have a big impact. No change to Indy support in the credential exchange, but rather adding support in the issue credential and present proof protocols that we already have, adding support in those for this new signature type and presentation mechanism. Does that make sense? Is that okay for a scope for this? Okay. So I've sort of got elements and interoperability, actually the two slides after our interoperability. So in this, I want to, you know, sort of raise the question, what would the community want to have as the minimum viable product for this? What needs to be in the underlying support in the signature? I would argue link secret support would be pretty important to have. It certainly would extend it if we don't have that, because now we have to have DIDs for the holder as well. That's completely possible, but it does sort of change a picture. Go ahead, George, first on the queue.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I realized I don't know. I was about to ask on the chat, but it's actually, the thing is, now that I see predicates there, you're reminding me I had that question, but not sure if you can answer it, or maybe Tobias. What sort of predicates are supported today, or what's the
none plan? Right now? So
okay.
There's discussion that it's possible. So link secret support, I think based on what I've heard from Tobias, and Tobias, correct me if I'm wrong on this, link secret support is relatively straightforward and can be added, it is intended to be added in the next short while. Revocation support requires per Brent about 80% of what's needed for general support of predicates. So that is a larger stretch. And full support for predicates, the greater than, less than ones that we have in Indy today, would be an even larger stretch. not a lot bigger than revocation, but a stretch from revocation itself, from a revocation only feature.
Yeah, absolutely right. So link secrets is relatively easy. It's just making sure that we get that representation and things like, you know, associated like to DID docs and how we see that kind of working in reference to some of the other parts in the ecosystem as well. Because the easier we make that aspect, the more adoptable it is for everybody in the ecosystem. So we're just working on making sure we get that as good as possible. And then when it comes to predicate proof support, Brent and I had a chat, and it comes down to which part you think is the most complicated part. I tend to side on that. I think, you know, the crypto wizards have made that the maths and that aspect of it nice and easy. I think the hard part around broad predicates proof support is actually having a robust syntax and a credential that's aware of all the different data types and enables that robustly. And so I would say adding in, you know, predicate proof support for one attribute and a credential for revocation purposes and link secrets as well is an easy lift because the crypto is kind of there. But adding it per attribute, we're definitely interested in that. We pushed that out for this revision of the signature spec for now because we didn't want it to have an incomplete solution in that regard. We wanted to have an answer to a few more questions. So yeah, that's where okay. I was at on.
Hey Sam, could you manage the blue hands, knock them off when they're
called? Yep.
Thank you. One of the things I wanted to throw out about predicates that we've realized recently is predicates are an expression that is given, you know, as part of a proof request for a cryptographic proof of you know, a piece of knowledge. What we've realized is just as important and perhaps more important, but a whole lot easier to do, is allowing a verifier to say, hey, by the way, when you respond to this, I'm only going to accept it if, from a business perspective, all of these things are true. And so it becomes a business rather than a cryptographic requirement. So in other words, you will have to expose the data elements that you're using, but the holder knows ahead of time whether their proof will be accepted. I actually think that would be at least as valuable, perhaps more so than predicate support early on, which is to expand what the definition of a proof request is, to go beyond just the cryptographic expression to include business level. So that's just one thought that may, to me, would make predicates even less crucial that we have support for them. Now, having said all that, I think revocation is absolutely, you know, very high on the list as well. And if, as you know, as Brent's pointed out, that requires most of what predicates require. I don't know if anyone has any thoughts on that.
So, yeah, having looked at this for quite a while, I guess when we were looking at it in terms of like the sheer sort of breadth of the solution, if we were given an ultimatum of, you know, a functioning verifiable credential ecosystem that is standards compliant, achieves, you know, all of our privacy goals, but, you know, falters on the aspect of predicate proof support now, that was a trade-off we were willing to make. And so we've kind of put predicate proofs in the basket of there's some unanswered questions and it significantly complicates a resulting solution. And unless we're satisfied with all the answers to all the unanswered questions, we don't think it should be added in, you know, just to add a feature, because, you know, every feature you add to a system as well makes it more complicated. It means people have to support more syntax right across the ecosystem. And so, yeah, I would just, you know, strong advise that we, when we're looking at that feature, we should really think, what does it buy us and what are the risks of introducing it as a feature?
But I come back to revocation.
Oh, revocation. So 100% you need a credential that is revocable. So you need some form of predicate for a certain attribute. But I guess what I'm saying when you're talking about predicates is like predicate support for every attribute in the credential.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah.
But so you're willing, from a contributor perspective, driving us to a revocation specific support ahead of dealing with all the issues related to predicates. Is that how I read what you said?
Yes. Yeah. We want link secret support and revocation support, but broad support for every predicate proof on every type of attribute that could feature in a credential.
Yeah.
That's where we think it gets too complicated.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I would go along with that. And as I say, if I can get more business level ones, I'd be even happier ahead of predicates if it de-risks and shortens the time. Second topic here, if no one's raising their hands, is the idea of shared libraries versus language specific wrappers. So in this, I'm not exactly sure, but right now, for example, the Matter team, Tobias showed that they had done a node wrapper around the URSA cryptography necessary to do this. Andrew Whitehead learned about this, took the URSA library and basically created a similar component in Python. Is that the way to go, or is there a set of Aries libraries necessary that other, other frameworks could consume? I just technically don't know the answer to that, so I was wondering if anyone had an idea what their thoughts were on this, and then we can get to what do we suggest we do as a community.
And Stephen, the URSA libraries are in Rust, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I know the progress on Ruby is slow and everything, but actually I have a nice bridge through Helix from Ruby to Rust. So a language specific wrapper like the Python method would be my current preferred fastest route.
Okay. Jonathan Holt on the queue.
Yeah, so I've been working with Rust quite a bit, and so I think I'm still stuck with RDF normalization. And I think, at least my understanding, looking through the code, the temporary node ID, and you basically remove that node ID, I think, because I was getting, I wasn't getting consistent results in the node ID. So I think I just need to wrap my head around it and actually figure this out. So I think mostly in Rust, there is no good RDF normalization algorithm library in Rust.
Yeah.
Would be necessary.
So can I jump in there, Jonathan? That's really interesting to hear, and I'd love to chat about that a little bit more because we're interested to know how people are finding in other languages. I believe there is a C implementation, RDF canonicalize, that you might be able to just consume straight from Rust. It's a native module for Node, but it's...
Yep. I think one of the RDF people actually wrote that. So actually, I think I was looking at that, but I think the issue was the latest JSON LD protected field. So this is the 2015 to 2018 derived algorithm is just still behind the time. So the latest one, which is written in Node, is the JSON, which is coming out of Digital Bazaar. And so I think that we do everything in either Go or Rust. So it's just a pain.
So and can you elaborate more? You're having problems with the blank node allocation algorithm, or you're having problems with what we've done in terms of how we allocate essentially fixed nodes to the derived proof graph?
No, I think the way you're basically having a placeholder for the node ID actually solves the problem. And I didn't really think about that to remove it, to normalize and to satisfy it. I think, have you gone into any issues as far as JSON LD context with a protected field equal to true? Because our current RDF normalization algorithms don't recognize Boolean values as being authentic in the RDF normalization. Right.
Okay, so we're having a catch up with Digital Bazaar on Monday to talk about that stuff. To talk about those kind of aspects and line up on that.
All right, cool. And that's just my blocker, is just that I'm still new to Rust, and it's just taking me time to to write this out.
If you don't mind, if you could send me a message about that, and I'll make sure that that's a talking point when I talk to Digital Bazaar about it.
I brought it up before because it's really only that the Digital Bazaar's library is the latest version 1.1 of our
Jason LD. Yeah.
With Jason LD and with projected fields. So I think that's just a blocker for me.
Okay.
This is Troy. I was just going to say the Golang JSON LD library actually does support most of JSON LD 1.1 at this point.
The JSON Gold. Yeah. So maybe it's been updated, but the last time I've been using it, it actually doesn't and it fails. But I'll check it out.
We built a full verifiable credential package on top of JSON Gold. And it works fine.
Okay, that's a clever name.
I was just going to say, probably our strategy on this is probably going to be to look for Go native crypto libraries first, as we've done with everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
But we'll have to see what's available and what we have to do.
Yeah. Okay. Tobias, your note on the chat, I'm kind of not quite sure how to take that. So should there be a shared library? Should there be a higher level Rust abstraction that Aries frameworks would consume? Or do you think we can define enough so that there are common structures being used, but we just go with wrappers?
So I think Jonathan raises a really good point, which is the biggest piece of algorithmic complexity that would need to be down below the layer that would make a significant, you know, lower lift for other people in different communities and a smaller, you know, I don't know, required implementation is getting RDF canonicalized and kind of JSON LD support down there. But like you, as has been pointed out, you know, Python already has most of this. JavaScript already does, Go does, and so I guess it just comes down to the people that have repos. I mean, sorry, that need language support. If all of them have support in most of their languages and there's only a couple that don't, then I think maybe naturally people might want to look for language specific components, because what it also does is demonstrates better interoperability as well across modern code bases. I appreciate that it makes a bigger lift for people, but it does actually lead to demonstrating, you know, complete interoperability.
Yeah. Okay, Brent.
I'm fine with that as an answer if we want to go fully language specific. I do feel like there are some components in the BBS plus LD signatures, you know, solution that really could benefit from having an interoperable, you know, single language base, you know, code base as part of Aries. But if the community decides to not go that direction, I think it'll be fine as long as we have the necessary RFCs in place to fully describe all of the things that we're supposed to be building in those language specific wrappers.
Yeah. And that would not be, those I think are outside of Aries RFCs. Those have to be in the place where this is, wherever this gets standardized. Cause I believe, cause recall that, Aries defines the protocol for exchanging credentials, but leaves the definition of the attachments that you use up to the verifiable credential exchange format that you are using. And this, to me, would go down into the category of verifiable credential format that you're using.
I think there's room for Aries to define how we are going to apply something in a standard way within our code bases. We're not declaring the thing itself, which is the crypto underlying or the LD specific stuff. But I think it's appropriate to say, hey, here's a model that we are promoting for use. In that way, there's more commonality instead of less. I think there's room for that.
I think that's the piece that I'm looking for. Thank you, Sam, for saying what I wanted to in better words.
like we're not crypto people, but we are applications of crypto people, right? We're using crypto. Right. And I think that having an opinion about, hey, let's all do it like this, even if we don't yet have one. One of the advantages there is that if I think that having an instantly available Rust library would be magical, but it appears to not be the case. And so if we sort of say, here's what the interface generally looks like, and then in the future, something Rust becomes available, it allows easier slotting in or diverting to another code base because the general interface model is the same.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not disputing that. I'm just pointing out that in Aries, in the credential exchange, we have a place that says, okay, here's what the attachments mean, and they generally point somewhere else. But that's fine. I mean, they can have as much or as little detail as we need to have in them. Right now, like the Indy ones now just point to the Indy implementations. They don't have a lot of detail on there other than to say that there's a identifier and here's where you go find the meaning of it.
Right.
Credential storage. So I think generally we're saying on this to wrap up this, I think generally for now, this is the answer. And the challenge is actually in the JSON LD support. I think that the wrapping of the BBS Plus stuff is relatively straightforward. It's the challenge is in getting support in those libraries and then common formats for the credential exchange operations. Okay. Credential storage, is there anything needed here as a prerequisite? I mean, we don't have Aries secure storage yet. Work is going on with it. Right now, many of the libraries, the frameworks that we do have use Indy wallet support. And presumably this would go into non-secret storage. Anything else as a prerequisite? This was more a brainstorm on my part, so I don't really expect a whole lot here, but any comments?
So I think caching the JSON-LD file is important.
I think it would be nice that you could hold a credential, meaning if I receive a credential, I'm not sure the current wallet is capable of holding that. We could do it in
some hacky way. It could certainly go in non-secret
way.
Storage.
It could go there. That feels awkward.
Totally. I'm not saying it's not, but I'm just saying, is it a prerequisite that we have Aries secure storage, or is it just left to the implementations to put the credentials where they want to put them for now?
Yeah, to me, that's always been the case, is you decide where you're going to put it. You can use the Indy wallet, you can use Aries secure storage, or if it existed.
Yeah, if it existed. I think once it exists, everyone will be using it, hopefully. Hopefully we're building something that everyone's going to use. So
I don't see why we would cache JSON in the secure storage.
The JSON LD, the at context.
We wouldn't cache that in the secure storage, but it would be nice to have it cached.
Okay.
You just have some facility to cache something.
Because otherwise you're calling home when you're reading the credential, which gets you leaking information. And at least in this model, actually, if you do a man-in-the-middle attack and actually intercept and actually give you a different LD dot at context, you actually can validate a simple signature as being validating as true. But I think it's certainly much more hard because it will show as invalid if actually you do that now with these BBS signatures.
I wonder if there's
Sam,
a fast track.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I think I'm the only thing next, and I think I'd rather keep talking about this. I don't need a lot of time. Well, so given that, I wonder if there is a motivation here to fast track one narrow use case of Aries secure storage, specifically to store credentials of various types.
Oh, interesting.
Meaning we want it all eventually, but since this is the pressing issue is that we don't actually have a same place to, a non-ugly place to store JSON-LD credentials, could we design one that can hold both credential, JSON-LD credentials and Indy ones and potentially more, of course, but could we fast track that and have the version 0.1 be limited in scope but deliver sooner than the broader vision?
I'm going to take a little bit of issue with calling them Aries credentials versus Indy credentials. we actually took a run at doing these sorts of JSON-LD credentials more than once in Indy's development lifecycle, and we couldn't get over some of the hurdles. So, you know, I'm actually really grateful that we're getting there, and I don't see this as a Indy or non-Indy credential thing. So I think we need to be careful about what language we use there, because we don't want it to sound like this is some sort of, you know, divergence from where we're trying to go as a community.
What do you propose that we call the non-JSON-LD credentials?
We always called them Comanche Lisenskaya signature credentials, but, you know,
CL SIG credentials,
and then there's BBS Plus credentials.
Totally fine. Sorry, I'll get out of the way. Brent, you've had your hand up.
Brent's on the queue. I'm next.
I just, to expand on what Nathan just said and to clarify things, I think many people on this call have heard the word Anoncreds 2 or Anoncreds 2.0 before, presented as a, hey, this is the next big thing for anonymous credentials. The BBS Plus signatures, as produced by Matter, are like 60% of what a non-creds 2.0 was supposed to be. It's like, it's most of the way there. This is awesome. This is a first step toward where we've been all looking forward to go for a very long time. The other phrase that people in this room have heard before is rich schemas. The rich schema work was an architectural effort to define how to use zero knowledge proof capable signatures with JSON-LD schemas and W3C verifiable credentials. Again, the stuff that Matter's done is like, this is a 60% of what that effort ultimately was going to result in. So this is like an awesome first step toward these cool new technologies and pieces that we've all been striving for and wanting and working toward for a very long time. So I think if we want to be totally accurate, we call them BBS Plus signature credentials, or if we want to make use of the terminology we've already been using, we just call them Anoncreds 2 and use the CL signatures as Anoncreds 1. I'm fine either way.
So I'm on the queue next, Cam, you're after. So the two comments I have, that first of all, the reason I called this out is because there is, when you use the Indy SDK, they expect Indy credentials, in that they expect, you know, they're tied to the storage of credentials, of Indy credentials, is tied to the rest of the credential exchange process. And therefore these would be different because these are not tied to those. That's, I was only calling out that difference, not whether it's, you know, what signature they're using. So I think that's the more practical piece of that. The other side of it is, again, the scope of this conversation is not where Indy, you know, about Indy at all, but rather this discussion is about a parallel piece at the Aries level, where underlying there's these other this other credential exchange model. Cam.
Right. So I'm thinking of what you guys are saying, but credential specific storage is very Indy related, as Steven just mentioned. And so, yeah, so we should clarify that the Aries secure storage is called the Aries secure storage because it's not specific to any kind of data or data model or data storage. It's just, you know, doing this securely, you know, having the tools to do it securely. So if JSON-LD wants to be brought in, then, you know, it's a matter of just, well, as I've laid it out and Mike Lauder has laid it out, it should just be adding in a few functions into the Rust code.
Yeah. Thanks, Cam. Yep. Troy is next.
Oh yeah, I wasn't quite following the naming discussion. I guess we just called them verifiable credentials in Go framework, and we have several LD signature suite options. And I can't see that. I'm just a little bit lost on this yeah. other naming idea.
Yeah, I think it's more the practical, where do we stick it from it? If you're using the Indy SDK as the storage, which is what we're doing now, where do we put them? Okay, let's move on to interoperability. First one's probably fairly easy. Interoperability in this context is we want to be able to not just have an implementation that allows one vendor, one builder to produce something that works with their agents, but rather multiple agents can build them. So the first thing I was thinking, so I've got four things I think to do with this, but DID resolution, which becomes, we already have issues with which indie ledger are you using if you're using an indie one. Troy, I don't, and George, I'm not even sure how in the Go implementation, how that's handled on, you know, if you're using, I understand there's some Hyperledger Fabric stuff.
Yeah, presumably so I can speak
you're using
to that.
Something to do with Universal Ledger.
We use the DID resolution HTTP binding and support the DID resolution result. So as an example, we can connect to the universal resolver itself or any DID method that returns a universal resolve, a DID resolution result.
Yeah. How do you go about writing DIDs in that case?
There's an attempt called the universal registrar in DIF to do that, but it still ends up being quite DID method specific, especially with, you know, how you deal with keys and updates to the DIDs. There is ongoing attempts. It's just not as universal as the resolver, let's say.
Okay. So the idea would be this would force on the frameworks that are indie based right now, force that whole issue of implementing an Aries agnostic DID layer. Am I correct? Everyone kind of agree with that? Or the other approach is we just use where we're using indie already, the indie based ones could continue to do what they're doing and use indie for those DIDs.
Well, and this is where I kind of shrug, because we've had this idea of the DID transaction, it needs to be something we've refactored to on the indie roadmap for a long time. No one's just cared to resource it. So whether we end up doing it in the resolver layer, or whether we could do it at the ledger layer, you know, it's just a matter of who wants to step up and help with that programming effort. There's a lot of attribute validation and anti-correlation protection that we want to add to the ledger at the ledger layer that we can't do unless we move to a more, you know, DID document centric transaction. So, you know, it's just a matter of who wants to step up and do that work.
Yeah. Is it a prerequisite to having the community build something, multiple members of the community build something that can be used to exchange credentials? Probably not at this point. We'd probably find
it's another factor.
First path.
Yeah, I believe there's another factor of interoperability here, but there's nothing that prevents you from trading JSON-LD BBS plus signatures using, indie style DIDs, right?
Yeah, like exactly.
So the expansion to more DIDs is obviously great, but it's sort of an orthogonal concern of interoperability.
Yeah. Okay, this seems to be the big one. We've sort of alluded to this a little bit in the past. But basically, we've got, and it's particularly with the 2.0 model that we've got issue credential 2.0 has been defined. I need to get on and do the present proof 2.0 and add the concepts we added in going from 1 to 2. But we've got those as being agnostic to the credential and proof request and proof formats. What goes in the message attachments for JSON-LD ZKPs? That has got to be defined. And that's the stuff that we were talking about, Sam, is, you know, where it could go. You're right. It could go certainly in an RFC that we put in into the Aries community. It probably is a larger conversation given that this work is trying to be broader and is winding up being broader than this. Any thoughts from people on where that should go or how we get there?
Tobias, you're proposing this as a work item in the CCG. Am I correct?
Correct. And while we've been on the call, it just got approved by the CCG. So that work item will be going, the draft spec that I just showed will be going over there. And all the boundaries of work and why we chose to push that item there is because linked data proofs as a general like assertion format or way to represent digital signatures in JSON-LD in general is a is like a single ring fenced item tending intending to be a W3C working group. And so we wanted it to just naturally be a part of that. But where its boundaries stop is it just defines how you create these signatures and use them, but how you then apply that into a verifiable credential and use them in a protocol like DigCom messaging is totally separate.
Yeah, but it specifies what it looks like, right? I mean, at least in coordination with the JSON-LD credential stuff. And so that thing, I believe, is the payload we actually need to pass inside of the protocols inside of Aries.
Yes. Well, it's just it looks just like a verifiable credential. So the thing you're transmitting on issuance is a payload that is conformant to the verifiable credential data model specification with a proof that is supported by the parties interacting.
Right.
Presumably, though, you know, there'll be other constraints. Like if once link secrets are there, presumably there's a blinded link secret that has to go as part of the request that then gets embedded in the, you know, so there's more than just the chunk of JSON LD that has to go back and forth, right?
But we're trying to actually simplify that right now. So we actually think we can achieve a model where as a subject, you contact an issuer with a DID that includes a commitment to a link secret. Mm-hmm. That they basically just resolve your DID, resolve that commitment, and produce a verifiable credential for you that has a link secret commitment, and they just send back. And the difference between the one that I showed, the payload that I showed today, and the one that has link secret is you scrub out the ID in the credential subject section of the verifiable credential, and you add a field in the proof section that basically just indicates the receiving party that this thing has is bound to a link secret. And if you derive a proof, you need that link secret in order to be able to do that. And that's it.
You said in there that the DID, the holder requires a DID. Is that the case?
Sorry?
You said in that the DID is required for the holder. Always?
We think if we can do that, it makes it even closer to, it brings the lines between subject-based DID authentication and link secret to one and the same, because all a link secret, all you bind in when you're using a link secret based verifiable credential is a commitment to a unrevealed value or private key or a link secret, whatever you want to call it. And that commitment is really essentially a public key. So that is information you could represent in a DID document and probably standardize across. You still have to prove knowledge. So the part that when you're sending across, that's like a, you know, proof of committed values. You still have to prove that aspect when you are the subject passing that DID, just like you have to prove ownership of the DID if you're using DID subject authentication when you're getting a credential issued. And so we're interested in exploring really trying to bring those things together so that the lens that gets applied to everyone else in the ecosystem is, oh, these things are way, way more similar than we ever thought.
Okay, Jonathan's on the queue.
Yeah, so certainly I understand where this was a work item in the W3C, but actually like the security auditing ability seems like it should happen within Hyperledger under URSA. And I think is that going to be, because this is conformant to the data model in a W3C.
Oh, you mean the cryptographic? Yeah, you know, we're not intending on taking the cryptographic implementations that we're using in URSA. Absolutely.
Right.
And we're intending on, Mike and I are intending on getting and pushing to get standards around this into IETF as well. At the CFRG, we would like to push BBS Plus signatures there and see what we get. So absolutely.
Yeah, is that just on the roadmap for URSA? And I imagine it being in Hyperledger working group, a project, that actually it should be on track for auditing.
Yeah, I would concede to the URSA maintainers on that point.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. Daniel, are you trying to raise your hand?
Well, I've got a mobile device and I'm not very good at using the controls on it, but yeah.
Okay, go for it.
I just wanted to say that I'm concerned about the way that I just heard Tobias frame this. Link secrets and DIDs are not intended to be an either or question. They're intended to be a both and question. So it was never true. And I've said this so many times now, I'm almost sick because I can't seem to get it to impinge on the consciousness of the people who are critical of link secrets in the W3C CCG. It was never the case that you had to choose between doing link secrets and DIDs. You could always put a DID in an indie style credential. That's been supported since day one. And we should not build a system where you pick link secrets and then you scrub out DIDs. We should build a system where you put a DID in if you want one and you put a link secret in if you want one. And there are just two options that you can turn on together or separately.
Plus one to that, Daniel, and you're absolutely right, and I understand your frustration, and my articulation is probably not helping that situation because that's what we intend. They have to be reflected as options, though, because there is optionality there. So, yeah, poor articulation, but yes, from me.
Okay, so the CCG work would not entirely get us to what goes in all of the messages. There would still be some work required for that. Tobias, do you have an idea where that would happen? Is that something that should happen here, should happen somewhere else? Happen here and somewhere else? What do you think?
So I would say the core payload, the biggest thing to standardize upon is taken care of by the verifiable credential data model and in conjunction with the link data proof spec. You know, because that is the bulk of the payload. But yes, there is still some pieces to kind of work out. But I would say that's the bulk of the stuff required.
Yeah. Okay. The last one I had was the presentation request format. There's been lots of discussion on this. Digital Bazaar proposed one this week. So there's basically three competing ones. JSON LD framing, is this a fourth, or does that get melded in with these, you know, whatever is the winner of these three or the combination that comes out of those? Thoughts on presentation request?
So I can give, I presented this work yesterday in the claims and credentials group with AdDiff, and we're assessing the overlap. In particular, presentation format to this point doesn't really have an opinion about, you know, certain types of semantic vocabulary languages like JSON-LD. It's kind of a layer above that. And the reason we just went for JSON-LD framing was, you know, we're issuing JSON-LD credentials and there was a syntax available to us to do that. And so we think it was the easiest way to use it if you're using those technologies in conjunction. There's always the option that frame isn't the thing that you present, that you actually pass in the request. You can have a different syntax that you then convert into a frame, because the frame is actually what you feed into the API. It does the actual graph operations required. So we would still suggest that that's the thing that you actually pass to an API to create these derived proofs, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the thing that gets passed across the wire. For simplification purposes, we would advise that it'd be the easiest option. And I've already talked to the author of verifiable presentation request spec, and there's ample room for this in that spec, naturally, because they're very JSON-LD orientated, and it's just another query type.
But so, Tobias, does that assume you already have the credential that you want to use to satisfy the part of the proof that you're going to use? Like one of the things, like I've got credential searching up here. That was a big deal. It's certainly a big deal and is handled very effectively in Indy. How do you find which credentials match all of the components of the proof? can you have in the presentation request, I want a set of proofs. I want these claims to all come from the same proof or from the same credential, but it can be, you know, a credential issued by any issuers that use this context, you know, that type, that higher level capability. That's really what I'm looking for. So it sounds like the JSON LD framing is more, oh, I've got this credential and I can use this mechanism to match it into the proof. Is that right? Or am I missing it?
Well, yes, but you can use a frame to match across, you know, in a way to match across multiple credentials that will match. A frame is not necessarily a one-to-one match to a particular credential. It depends what frame you have as the input, if you know what I mean. Because a frame is just a generic concept of basically given an input piece of information like a graph of data, the frame is just the lens I want to apply to it or what I want to do to it and, mm-hmm. and produce an output. And so the frame and the credential or the thing that I'm framing is not a one-to-one match. You can build generic frames. But yes, in terms of like multiple issuers and some of the syntax, there's still some syntax to develop there and decide upon.
Can you do Boolean operations? What I mean by Boolean operations is I want to be able to say, you can prove to me the first name that you have on your driver's license, or you can prove to me the first name from your passport. And on the driver's license, your first name might be called first underscore name. And on your passport, it might be called given capital N name. But I don't care. I'm going to call it X. Can you do that kind of thing?
That would be more like multiple frames that are stitched together with a higher level language, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that to me is what the presentation request needs to
yeah.
be.
And so along that, those, and along those lines, can I add, can you do any cardinality check?
Could you elaborate exactly what you mean by that?
Like there must be one or there must be two, right? Or three. That's a cardinality predicate.
There must be one. Could you further qualify, like give an example use case of that?
So I'm thinking in the biometric formats, the problem is that you need to match a certain subset of minutiae. You can't have a and composition because you can't match everything. You cannot have or because you cannot just match one. If you match masked like a certain cardinal subset, right? So like a quorum, two-thirds of a set. So that's one of the difficult things. I haven't found that yet in a set of predicates.
Imagine you can overload the JSON-LD to use additional first name or given name. And so in which case there's multiples of them, in which case that you could get it to validate.
Yeah.
So cardinality would be that you can only have one of those attributes in the credential.
That's another type of, yeah, cardinality constraints are fairly common outside. Yeah,
so JSON-LD framing as a syntax is not like, not an overly like comprehensive syntax in terms of there are things, certain limitations to it. Just because it needs to be an algorithm that robustly and reliably works and is, you know, a surface on which people can implement across all JSON-LD tool sets. So I think they've been trying to trade the balance of those things when designing that. And so potentially in certain use cases, we will need some high level syntax that wraps around that or some more comprehensive request syntax based on whatever use cases we need to represent in a request over top. But so as I sort of said at the start, we would, even if you had a more complicated request that you would take and you would use that to maybe take a pass over the information you have in your wallet and say, okay, these things are going to satisfy the request. And then you take what you have from the request and transform that into frames just so that you don't have to do the actual derived proof aspects of it. Then I think that would be the balance. So you would take the request and transform it into suitable graphs based on information you've matched from your wallet and apply it. And you would get back the derived proofs of the information you would like to reveal.
Yeah. So this is more after you get through the presentation request, you identify the credentials you want, then you apply this to match them into, to construct the actual proof. Okay.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So mechanically, we're almost out, Stephen. Yeah.
Sorry. I am so sorry. This has been a great conversation. Yeah, thanks all for participating. This was what I wanted to finish with. We don't have nearly the time, but basically what I wondered is who is committed to doing something. Sounds like Matter is still committed to doing a bunch of things. We're interested and may do something, but we need to figure out what we want to do. And then the last was, you know, based on this discussion, what would be a MVP of JSON LD ZKPs in Aries? Obviously we can't get to that discussion. So Sam, I don't know how we finish, but we're finished because the time's done.
We got to be finished. I would love like 15 seconds to lightly cover the topic that I wanted to. I'm not at all upset about how we spent our time, but I'd love to raise some attention to that right before we leave. As far as continuing this discussion, I think that we ought to take it to Rocket Chat and banter some of these things, and then or issues inside of the Aries RFC repo might be the right way to sort of raise this, even though they're not directly related RFCs. And then if the conversation is still ongoing, I think it's a topic we probably ought to hit next week. The last thing on our agenda I will cover just very briefly. I had committed to write up the role request, or please play the role of. This is in a pull request. I struggled a lot with naming things. Not that that's ever super easy, but I have some stuff in here, and I'd love some feedback. I already have a comment on this from George, I believe. So if you are interested in this sort of a thing, this will help help us to resolve some of these last remaining issues that we need to work on to get the exchange working. And with that, thank you everybody for coming and the awesome conversation and the work done by everybody. And we will see you on Rocket Chat in issues and online elsewhere. Thanks all for coming. And I hope you have a great week.
Thank you, Sam.